All right, our next speaker today is Dr. Emily Haas. Emily has been with Human Factors Branch of the Pittsburgh Mining Research Division of NIOSH for 7 years, and she has a doctorate in health communications from Purdue University. The title of her presentation will be Using Safety Climate Trends in the Coal Industry to Improve the Identification and Use of Leading Indicators.
Thanks, Drew, and thank you, everyone, for coming to this presentation. I'm here with my colleague, Cassie Hobel, and we've been doing some safety climate research for the last few years at NIOSH, so we're excited to share some results with you from the overall sample and then specific to the coal industry to determine some areas of improvement that we can make within mines health and safety management system. So kind of the objectives that we're going to go over, is there a difference in safety climate perceptions among our mining subsectors? And, you know, what can we learn from that? And like I said, how can we make changes to mine sites' overall health and safety management systems to kind of mitigate some of these gaps in safety climate on each site and then across the industry? So just so we're all on the same page, just to give an overall definition of safety climate is an assessment and analysis of individual shared perceptions of the values, attitudes, beliefs, or behaviors that pertain to an organization's safety and health program at a specific point in time. A more common definition of like safety culture would be kind of the way that we do things around here, even when nobody's looking. This is the definition that NIOSH, we have a whole safety climate culture work group, and this is the overall definition that we have come up with. And then a health and safety management system is a set of interrelated and interacting elements that companies design and establish to achieve whatever occupational health and safety goals that they have. So the overall objective of a health and safety management system by going through your plan, do, and checked act cycle would be to try to prevent injuries, illnesses, and loss prevention. So just so we kind of have an understanding of these definitions as we'll be going through these terms throughout the presentation. So in the past, more traditional safety culture or safety climate assessments have kind of given industry a combined score. Maybe you've had people come on your site and hand out surveys, and they've maybe given you an analysis back and maybe said your culture is good or bad or, you know, neutral, but not very specific results. And some barriers to this approach of just doing an overall assessment and not looking at specific constructs or factors is that you don't really quite know what's working and what's not. You know, what are my strengths and weaknesses on site? So to be able to improve performance, we need to have some specific areas of focus. So really emphasizing those leading indicators on site. And it's hard to track root causes of lagging indicators without having a better handle on what those leading indicators are too. And then again, there's little tangible area that we can focus on if we don't have specific areas of focus that the survey measured. So what NIOSH did a few years ago when we started our new project on health and safety management systems is we created a 58-question safety climate survey. We had a 6-point scale, one from strongly disagree to six being strongly agree, and six trended towards the higher scores of what you would want to see. And the survey measured a lot of different factors. So instead of going out and, you know, just saying we have the safety climate survey, when we went and talked to companies, we said, you know, here are all the different things that we're measuring within the survey, really realizing that we need to measure those organizational factors that are important that companies can change, but also taking into account those personal factors that may be influencing workers' decision-making on the job. So for the organizational factors that we measured, we looked at organizational support, supervisor support and communication, coworker communication, worker engagement, and health and safety training. Those personal factors we looked at included adaptability on the job, risk tolerance, thoroughness, a worker's sense of control, and then their motivation and knowledge on the job. We used all of these factors to try to predict workers' overall performance on the job, which we measured by looking at workers' proactivity and compliance. And then we also looked at outcomes from the previous 6 months as self-reported by workers. So we asked them in the last 6 months how many times they'd experienced a near miss, an incident that required medical attention, first aid, or resulted in lost days on the job. So the survey took about 15 minutes for workers to complete. We ended up going to 40 mines throughout 18 states between 2016 and 2018. 620 of these surveys were from coal mines, so 21% of our sample. You can see at the bottom that just under half of our sample was in stone, sand, and gravel, and 31% was in industrial minerals. So looking at the differences among these three different subsectors, it might be hard to see the graph, but these are just some of the organizational constructs that we measured, because again, these are some areas that you all have control over that you can improve. And you can see coal on the far left of this table, it's all lower average. And then stone, sand, and gravel and industrial minerals on the other two columns, those averages go up. So, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about possible reasons for these differences and what coal companies and companies in stone, sand, and gravel and industrial minerals have been doing to improve some of these perceptions that workers have, different interventions that they've engaged in. Before we do that, I wanted to give kind of an overall snapshot of the results related to the relative importance of each construct. Like I said, we were trying to really help companies figure out, you know, where is the best area for us to focus? Because again, the idea is my culture may be good or bad, but what can I do? So by surveying these different factors and doing the analysis, we could really help companies understand where they should be focusing. So we set up a matrix to help them understand their own results. So we would take the constructs and say, here are your core strengths, what you can leverage, you know, kind of what your competitive advantages is. So these constructs were rated high and they were also important to workers. So this is where companies were doing really well. In terms of their secondary strength or things to maintain, this is when the average might be high as perceived by workers, but they were really deemed less important in our overall regression analysis. So this is really a good indicator of wasted resources, meaning, you know, you're good. You don't need to really invest any more time in this. You'll see on the next slide for most companies, training is something that came up a lot here, because usually workers perceive their training to be really adequate on site, but it doesn't come up as super important in that regression analysis and predicting their performance. So usually companies, you know, think training is the answer, but really it's good, but we need to look at our daily changes on site to really sustain performance. And then that secondary weakness and low gain, this is when an average for a construct might actually be really low, but it didn't really come out as being really important or influential in our analysis. So we would tell companies, even though, you know, workers, you know, are perceiving this to be bad, you know, don't focus your efforts here. Instead, focus your efforts on these critical weaknesses that you really need to fix now, meaning that workers were rating these constructs as really poor, but they were really important in the analysis and really influencing workers' decision making. So to kind of just show where some of these constructs came up, for those core strengths that companies could leverage, workers reported being really thorough on the job. That was the average that had, you know, really had the scale that had the highest averages. Coworker communication also was a very high average and was really important. It was actually the biggest external predictor to workers being compliant on the job. In terms of the secondary strengths that we said companies can maintain, again, their health and safety training usually rated really high, and supervisor support usually rated high. In terms of the secondary weakness but low gain, you don't really have to focus or think about this too much right now, organizational support and adaptability. where we really focused with the majority of the companies based on their results. We're looking at interventions for risk tolerance, worker engagement, supervisor communication, and sense of control. Again, these were things that had lower averages or a really high percentage of disagreement with some of the questions, but they really ranked as being very important predictors in workers' proactive and compliant behaviors on the job. So I'll go over some of the different results for the commodities and talk a little bit about interventions as I go through those results. So looking at supervisor communication and support, again, the supervisor communication was this critical element that we were helping companies fix. You can see the averages are all pretty similar for the overall at the top, and then looking at the three together, coal being slightly lower. Looking at some of the results on the bottom here with common gaps, communication about site-specific hazards was one of the items that workers tended to disagree with. Within coal, 22% of coal miners disagreed that their supervisor communicates about site-specific hazards, which was something that came up in a lot of task training when workers said maybe they were rotating tasks more than they used to. Having communication about hazards specific to that job came up as a gap. Consequences for not following health and safety rules in terms of if a supervisor saw something unsafe, if there was any negative consequence for that, 23% of coal miners disagreed with that statement. And then in terms of consistent visibility and monitoring of health and safety, 29% of coal miners disagreed with that. So this question has to do with a lot of workers saying, I see my supervisor at the beginning of my shift and at the end of my shift, but I don't really see them or communicate with them throughout the day. And this was, you know, really all sectors that we surveyed. It was really the item that most workers disagreed with, that their supervisor just isn't really highly visible and that they wanted them to be more visible. Coworker communication, the averages were really high. Again, they were a little bit lower in coal. Twice as many coal miners felt that coworkers didn't communicate with each other about health and safety hazards. When we probe this a little bit more, you know, the environments are obviously different, and underground is more noisy, it's harder to communicate, but was something that coal companies were trying to work on within their work crews. And then worker engagement, this was, again, one of those critical fix elements that we were focusing on with companies. And even though coal miners had a lower average, as you can see, really about 30% of workers in each industry felt that they weren't involved in health and safety activities on site. So this was really something that every company tried to engage in by starting to develop health and safety committees and involving hourly workers on those committees. Actually, a lot of coal companies really wanted to know, I want to know the exact group that feels like they're not involved. So we did additional analyses because these companies are bigger and we could figure out, okay, it's actually your group of people who are 35 to 45 who have been employed on site for 11 to 15 years. And after we could really weed down the more disgruntled group, they could really start involving them more in figuring out, you know, what are some of the issues and how can we mitigate that. And then in terms of risk tolerance, this was an item that had really high averages, meaning that workers, you know, really didn't take a lot of risks on site. And in general, you had about 13% of the entire sample reporting that they took risks on a pretty regular basis. And in terms of risk avoidance on site, coal companies also took a really extra effort to put additional signage up and communicate more during pre-shift meetings and during trainings and adding things about risk tolerance and avoidance into their MSHA annual refresher trainings, particularly this year, to really minimize the sense of complacency among their workforce. And then I think the last result for the differences is organizational support for health and safety. And for this one, remember, it was one that had a lower average but didn't really come up as being a significant predictor in our overall analysis. But still important to point out that within this scale, one of the items talks about production pressures and really all the workers, regardless of the sector, felt like they had impossible production pressures. About 40% of the sample really felt that way, and salaried workers felt that way significantly more than the hourly workforce. So you can see that trickling down to hourly workforce in terms of feeling those pressures to produce. So yeah, 49% of coal miners felt that as long as the job got done, it doesn't matter if the health and safety rules are followed, and then 40% felt they had those impossible production pressures. So why do these results matter? And, you know, why do we really have to think about them? So like I said, we were measuring workers' performance and the impact of these factors on workers' performance. And really through our analysis, you know, we could actually predict a pretty strong amount or large amount of workers' performance in terms of their proactive and compliant behaviors by looking at these different factors. And again, you don't have to address all of them, but through our analysis, we could at least tell companies where to start. And they could make these changes on a site level, an organizational level, or start from a company-wide level with interventions at all of their sites, which quite a few of our companies did do. So kind of thinking about, you know, what might have influenced some of these results, I did want to point out, you know, does the size matter? Because our participating coal mines were larger. You know, they ranged from 78 to 280 workers. You know, our average coal mine had 206 responses. Compared to our other commodities, where the average was we had 7 workers at sites, actually up to, again, 280 people with an average of 74. So the sandstone and gravel industrial mineral sites were smaller. You know, the interventions are easier to do. We had some companies in sandstone and gravel that actually, they were able to develop worker engagement interventions, resurvey everyone, and make changes all within a year. And that would be hard at companies that are a lot bigger. And there has been similar safety climate research in Australia that has shown that smaller mines consistently show more positive responses. So, you know, while bigger mines, you know, and those companies often have a really strong health and safety management system in place with all kinds of components, you know, research shows that those smaller mines are able to achieve that closer contact between employees. So that usually kind of outweighs some of the resources that large sites have. So that's one reason to consider why the results came out this way for our analysis. And then thinking about experience and whether experience matters, in all of our sectors, including coal, the results show different perceptions based on time in the industry. So those with the least amount of experience, under 1 year and 1 to 5 years, reported being more compliant and risk avoidant. And those with 6 to 10 years of experience, then they started to drop, and it really never got high. Well, in our coal sector, we have a higher percentage of people who have, you know, a lot of experience. So it's a little bit skewed when you look at coal versus the other industries. So that could also be a reason for some of those results. So with that said, you know, what are some things that the coal industry can do? I wanted to provide a few quick you know, examples and practice and intervention points from other companies. We did follow up and do longitudinal studies with coal, stone, sand, and gravel, and we did a lot of interviews. We went back out to 12 mines, did regional workshops, talked with a lot of workers and managers to figure out what these results really mean. So in terms of promoting autonomy, we found that that standard organizational structure that a lot of people typically have versus an autonomous structure where people are involved in hiring, have a specific say in health and safety, they're engaged in health and safety on a daily basis. These companies promote that they have autonomous work groups. Their results were much higher, as you can see in the green here. And we did publish a paper on this that was in Professional Safety in 2018. So if you're interested in ways that companies promote autonomous work groups, let me know and I can send you that article. But a lot of companies developed interventions to really improve that sense of worker autonomy. And then in terms of concrete leadership roles, we wanted to look specifically, too, at how companies set up their leadership structure, because when we were out at a lot of companies, we found that there are some that have kind of this hourly supervisor and then a salary supervisor above them, and then there's another supervisor above them. And hourly workers were saying, I really don't know who I should be reporting to, and that's causing a big gap in communication, and I'm getting a little bit confused. And that, so we wanted to compare. We took one company that half their sites had this kind of multi-level leadership structure, and then they had the more standard structure where the worker just has one supervisor, and that's who they know they report to no matter what. And we really found that that standard structure works a lot better than that multi-level structure, because you don't really have that role ambiguity. You know who to go to. So some of our companies actually changed their leadership format and got rid of this multi-level leadership tier, and their results improved on follow-up. And then finally, I just wanted to point out that organizations really do have the ability to improve the implementation of their system. And you know, this is one example within MSHA's annual refresher training. Obviously, people have to cover certain topics every year, but some of our participating sites, after seeing the importance of communication and leadership and engagement and really how that influences workers' decision-making, really started to incorporate these modules within their annual refresher trainings, and then they took these and started integrating them into their daily practices. So again, starting to develop some of those soft skills that workers can use throughout the day. And this is one site where we went back and surveyed them a year later, and you could see on that time too, their averages are higher, and we did publish an article about this and the changes that this company made, and that was in Rock Products last year. So if you're interested in that, to see exactly changes that the company made, you know, let me know and I can email that to you as well. So in general, you know, what's missing to better answer some of these questions and really help the coal industry improve safety culture overall? You know, really getting a sample of smaller coal mines to better understand the differences in small coal mines versus large coal mines. And we also need to get metal mines included in the current sample. Again, in Australia, some of their metal mines had much lower averages than coal. We didn't have metal mines. And then accident rates of participating mines to compare with those worker perceptions. We have that for some of the mines, but not all. And then kind of the scope of the health and safety management systems of participating mines to kind of better inform these results. So that is it. I can take any questions that you might have, or you can also get with Cassie later too. We'll both be around. Yes.
Would it make sense to include the service industry? You know, we have as many people employed in mining on the service side, so everything you've referenced would be mines. Did you include the service industry, or should we?
We definitely should. We don't have any surface coal mines in this sample. We do have one that is interested in participating, so if we, you know, we do have a lot of surface operations in this sample, just not in coal. So, yeah.
I'm saying service, not surface. The organization that is servicing the industry.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The same question for that.
Yeah. No, I think so. There's a lot of different analyses that we can do with this to look at some of those differences. So it does make sense to include that.
I would think you'd have volunteers from the exhibition group here if you're interested in doing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks.
It's interesting, Emily. Thank you for that presentation. Steve Page and I did some work a long time ago on productivity in mining. And it turned out that the mines that were most productive also had the best communications. Now, we weren't communications experts at the time, but I think you might want to include a question on productivity of these various mines and factor that into your analysis.
Yeah, that is something that is easier to get in coal than in the other commodities because they usually have quotas that they have to fulfill every day. It's usually more in flux for stone, sand, and gravel. But we have, you know, research has shown that the safest mines are the most productive mines, and it makes sense communication would be high for those as well. So that's a good point. Any other questions, comments? All right, thank you.